Assalamu alaikum, everyone, and welcome back to Vortex of Truth. My name is Neema Tarabi, and I'm delighted to have you join me on this Friday afternoon. Very often, it's easy to make a split-second decision about a topic, especially sensitive topics, without looking deeper and trying to put yourself in the position of the person being judged. It's sometimes unnecessary to do this in cases where right and wrong are outlined clearly, but on the other hand, there are countless situations where a bit of empathy could change a lot. Vortex of Truth is an attempt to evoke that empathy in our listeners. Today's sketch will be tackling a topic that isn't new and yet still isn't being resolved the way that it should. Bullying is something that we've all been witness to, even if it hasn't affected us personally, and it seems like this societal ill is getting worse and worse as time goes by. Despite programs and attempts to educate the youth and eradicate bullying, we constantly hear and see stories of bullying making the rounds. This is sadly not something that stops at the schoolyard, but can continue into work environments and occur at home as well. But why is bullying such an epidemic? What causes it? Is it the video games? Is it Shaitan? Is it the food we eat, which is stuffed with preservatives and hormones? There are studies and papers trying to find an understanding of how this disease began and what can be done to treat it. Because it is a disease, and one that seems to be catching. So, the Oxford Dictionary's definition for bullying is as follows. A person who habitually seeks to harm or intimidate those who they perceive as vulnerable. Bullying is at its heart about power and jealousy. For the bully, there's something taunting and hurting them, and so to make themselves feel better and lessen the impact of their own hurt, they transfer it onto another by making themselves the aggressor and not the victim. It's a sad reality that bullies are often hurt themselves and so seek to harm others to make themselves feel better about their pain. The Charlatans of Africa's website's first question for bullies is, are you a bully because someone is bullying you? Before we begin today's sketch, I'd like to recommend Child Violence South Africa's website as a resource for trying to understand and work against bullying. They have pages of information for children, teenagers, parents, and teachers, and they have an online chat program on weekdays between 2 and 6 p.m. in addition to their 24-hour toll-free number. These resources have been created for a reason, and I would urge you to never be afraid to use them if you feel you have need. You know, a common theme amongst people who are being hurt is to downplay what is happening to them and look to the next person who seems to have it worse as a reason to not speak up or try to get help. And this idea that you can endure and manage what pain you're being put through because somebody else has it worse is entirely flawed. Please reach out and make use of what's there to help you because you do need it and you do deserve it. But that said, let's get into today's sketch. It's time for school and his tummy hurts. He's told his mummy that it hurts, and she gave him a hug, which made him feel better. Then she told him that he was still going to school, which made the hurt feel worse. He doesn't want to go to school. He wants to stay home and play with his toys. He is not allowed to play with his toys when he's sick. Mummy makes him lie in his bed and sleep all day. But even though he doesn't like that, he likes it more than school. He'll stay in bed if he gets to stay away from school. Mummy takes him to school anyways, and tells him in the car that he has Monday blues. He doesn't know what that is, but he thinks that mommy should have kept him home if she knows that there's something wrong with him. But the car's pulled up to the school gates, and mommy takes him into the classroom herself instead of him going by himself as usual. She holds his hand while she talks to his teacher, and it's okay for a while. They have circle time, and everyone tells him his teacher and the rest of the class about what they did on the weekend. He tells them that he went to see his mummy's mummy, and she was nice and warm and gave him a chocolate when mummy wasn't looking. His Miss Teacher looks like mummy does when mummy's about to start laughing, so that's nice. Then Miss Teacher reads them a story and asks them questions after. He doesn't answer any questions, but he listens to everyone else who does, and it's fun, and he thinks mummy was right when she told him he'd have a good time and he'd miss not going to school. Mummy's always right when she tells him something, except for only once or twice. He asked Daddy last week how come Mummy can be right so much when he can't be right, and Daddy told him all mummies did that. They get taught how at mummy school. He didn't fuss about going to school last week because he wanted to be right like Mummy. But then school was bad, and he decided that he was fine being wrong because Mummy would tell him how to be right if he asked nicely. His stomach started to hurt again, and his face feels hot. He'd forgotten how bad school was because they got to do circle time and story time, but now he remembers and he is scared. it's almost time to go on the playground, and then it'll be bad. Maybe if she told Miss Teacher that he felt sick, she'd keep him inside with her while everyone else ran around outside. He goes to her desk and tells her his tummy hurts, and she tells him it's almost time to break and to go back to his coloring and sit for a little longer. Then he can go play. But he doesn't want to play. He wants to stay in the classroom. When it was daytime, he just wouldn't get up. He'd stay in his chair. This teacher wouldn't see him if he was quiet and sat small like his big cousins had taught him how to when they played hide and seek. He sits still, like they taught him, and doesn't giggle even a little. He doesn't want to giggle now like he did when they played hide and seek, so it isn't hard. Miss Teacher finds him anyways. His big cousins had found him. He always had to run out and tell them, "Here I am." But Miss Teacher found him in a second. Maybe he didn't do it right. Miss Teacher makes him go outside, and she's looking cross, so he does as he was told quickly. He doesn't want Miss Teacher to be mad at him. He likes Miss Teacher. He goes outside with Miss Teacher and sits on the swing like she told him to. His tummy's starting to hurt again. He likes the swings, but he hasn't gone on them for a while. The last time he went on the swing, he got yelled at by the big, mean girl in his class. She's the biggest girl in the class, and her name is Bibi. She's old, too, and she said that means everyone has to listen to her. She got mad at him last time because she wanted to swing, and he didn't let her take his turn. But it was his turn, and Mummy and Daddy and Miss Teacher always say you have to wait your turn and share, so he was wrong. But she pushed him, and it hurt, and since then she's always mean to him. When they're in the same group, she takes his colors and breaks them, and then he can't color his pictures properly. But he can't say anything because the last time when Baby LeBlanc drooled on his book, Mummy said sometimes when you share with people, they make a mess, but it's okay and we mustn't complain or get cross. But it's still sad and he doesn't want to share with her anymore. So he keeps his colors away and only uses the one he needs to make his picture. It's mean, but she was mean first, so he doesn't feel bad. He swings happily for a few minutes and the pain in his tummy goes away, so it can fly. Mummy said that's butterflies, but he thinks this might be one of the times when Mummy is wrong, because he doesn't eat butterflies and they don't live in tummies. It feels like how it feels when Mummy or Daddy are driving on a hill, and it's his favorite ever feeling, so he forgets to be sad and scared and just has fun. He finishes his turn, and a girl called Mimi takes the next one. He's sitting in the sand and drawing with a stick when someone's hand grabs his stick. He lets go in surprise, and there's Baby looking mad and breaking his stick. Then she shoves him, and he remembers what his mummy taught him to do if somebody's hurting him, and he yells. It's not a mistake. He knows that because she did it last time, and now she's doing it again, so she means it, and he yells, and he starts crying, and a teacher, not his Miss Teacher, but another one, comes running. He expects her to scold Bibi, but she doesn't. She helps him get up, and then she takes him and Bibi under the tree, where it's quiet, and asks them what's wrong. He's starting to tell her, but then Bibi starts crying and tells the teacher that he hurt her, and that's a lie. He tries to tell the teacher that she pushed him and broke his stick, and the teacher starts to be on his side. But then Bibi says that he hurt her first, and he didn't. He didn't do anything wrong. The teacher takes them both to their classroom and goes to his teacher for a long time. Bibi isn't crying anymore now that the teacher's not looking, and he feels sick and bad. Mummy told him that if he got hurt, he needed to shout, and then someone would come and help him. And the teacher did come, but she didn't help. She scolded him. But she's so mean. His Miss Teacher tells him that he's going to sit somewhere else. Swapping teachers again this day, but now no one else is playing, only him, and it's not fun. He asks why only he is moving, and she tells him that he was naughty. But he wasn't. He's not naughty. Bibi is. He tells Miss Teacher that, and she shakes her head at him and tells him to sit quietly. Then she leaves the class, and the other teacher brings her a class, and they will sit together on the carpet and read another story. They only get one story a day normally, so it's nice, but it's a very short story, and the teacher doesn't read very nice. She doesn't do the voices. When it's home time, he gets told that his mummy is going to fetch him from the class, and he doesn't go out to wait. She comes, and she looks sad. Everyone else is gone, and he's bored sitting at his new table by himself, so he starts to play with the shoes. Mummy is teaching him how to tie them by himself, and he could almost do it, but it looks messy and not like how she does it. Mummy takes him home, and in the car, when he told her about his day, She scolds him for lying. Mommy also doesn't believe him. And now he starts crying because his tummy hurts and baby was mean to him and that hurts still. And his teacher was mean and now mommy is being mean. He hates school. Mommy was wrong again. He didn't have fun. And it's not nice. That's the end of the first part of our sketch. Talking from the, reading or listening from the point of a little boy who is being bullied by a girl in his class. And now we start the second half of the sketch where we dip into the mind of the bully. Here we go. Nobody listens to her until she yells. The teacher says, use inside voices. But she says, because at home, mommy and daddy yell all the time. They yell at each other, and they yell at the adults who call on the phone, and they yell at her. They yell at her lots. They're mad at her because she doesn't do good at school. She's supposed to be in grade one, but she's still with the babies because she's dumb. That's what daddy says. She's dumb and it's bad and she's bad. Daddy tests her and he slaps her when she says the wrong answer. She says the wrong answer a lot. It doesn't matter that nobody told her the right answer. Daddy says she's supposed to know. He never tells her how she's supposed to know at all. Mommy says she's just slow and somebody has to be at the bottom and they must just accept it. Mommy thinks that they're wasting money keeping her back. This is the second time they did it, and daddy says that means she should be 3 times as good as everyone else. But she's not. She's not even half as good as some of them, and it makes her mad, so she hits. Hitting is bad at school. She doesn't know why, but it is, and the teacher says she's not allowed to. She must use her words. So she starts to do that, but then they tell her she's shouting, and it's mean, and she needs to use inside voices. She doesn't get what inside voices are, so she just doesn't talk mostly. And that seems to work. She's not in trouble at least, which is the good thing. She doesn't like to be in trouble, because then everybody is mad, and she gets slapped by mommy and daddy. Mommy says that slacking her is very hard, and she doesn't like it. But mommy still does it, so baby thinks that mommy is a liar. Daddy thinks so, too. He calls mommy a filthy liar and baby a filthy pig. Baby used to like it if they were the same, but then she called somebody at school a filthy liar and her teacher got mad at her, so now she doesn't like it anymore. She doesn't say she doesn't like it because daddy's bigger than her, and he gets mad when she backchats him. Baby doesn't know what backchat is really, except that it makes daddy's face go red and then he starts to breathe all heavy, like how her teacher explained the bull does when they read about it at story time last month. She thinks that backchat is whenever she talks, because every time she does that, he yells. Baby loves going to school because it gets her away from mommy and daddy. She cried when it was time to go home the first few times, but that made mommy's face go red, and she shouted at baby for so long when she did that, that baby doesn't do it any longer. Mommy threatened to lock her out at the house the last time she did that, but it's not a real threat. Mommy knows this. Baby knows this because mommy didn't do it. And later, when she looked normal again, she came and she said sorry to baby. She even brushed her hair and hugged her, which baby loves best, more than anything else in the world. There's a boy at school whose mommy hugs him every day. She parks their shiny car, and then she gets up, and she unbuckles him from his seat, and she hugs him before he goes into the big school building. Baby hates that boy. She wants her mommy to be like his. She would trade mommies with him if she could. It's not fair that his mommy is pretty and gives hugs all the time, and hers is only pretty sometimes and red and angry others. Baby pretends sometimes that her mommy and his mommy got confused, and baby is meant to be the other lady's baby. She knows it's wrong, but she does it anyway. It feels so nice when she does it. He has nice things, the boy. He has a good lunch and pretty crayons. Baby broke some of his crayons and it was an accident. It was. And he had more the next day. So she broke more because it felt good and he had more anyway. But then the new crayons didn't come, so she felt a little bit bad. Not that bad, because he stopped sharing with her. But little. It was mean to not share, she would swear with him. Today, baby was mad already because mommy didn't make her breakfast. And when she asked Mommy, Mommy just said she was big enough to pour cereal by herself. Louie didn't want cereal. She wanted eggs, but Mommy didn't make them for her, so she had to eat the cereal. She only ate a little bit, and now her tummy was growling. Then the bad boy with his nice mommy came into the class, and his mommy was holding his hand. It hurt in her chest, and she wanted to smack him like Daddy smacked her when she made him angry. But she couldn't, so she just sat and dug her nails into the rubber of her shoe, making a pattern. She always felt better when she did that, and the deeper the pattern, the better. Nobody noticed because she did it on the bottom where the sole went, so she didn't get shouted at or scolded. It was her favorite secret to have. They had circle time, and then the boy made her even more mad. He had a mummy and a mummy's mummy. He had both. It wasn't fair. It was so mean. He was bad. Badder than she was. Badder than Daddy called her or anyone else. And somebody would smack him. Maybe she would tell Daddy, and then Daddy would smack him. But Daddy got mad when she wasted his time, so maybe no. And Mommy didn't like it when she talked about other people's mummies, so she couldn't tell Mommy either. But bad people had to get punished. She knew that. So she would do it. It would be a good thing, and then maybe Mommy and Daddy would laugh and smile with her. They colored next, and she got madder, remembering the crayons that she didn't get to share. And then she took her black crayon, and she drew it across the page really, really hard, pressing, and then little bits came out of it. Her crayons were nice, too, but they weren't pretty like his. She liked to press, and it made them stubby. The swings were full. They were everyone's favorite, but they were full. She would have yelled if she wanted to be on one, but the teacher was there, and they'd scold her if she started to shout, so she had to wait. She ran around and kicked the ball with the others. She was good at playing outside, and it was fun, too, so she did it every day. People liked her when she made them win. Alright, we are scheduled to take a short break now, but we will be back for the rest of today's episode of Vortex of Truth very soon, and we hope that you join us when we get back from the break. Assalamu alaikum everyone, and welcome back to Vortex of Truth. We are halfway through our show and also halfway through our sketch for today. Today we're discussing bullying with a specific focus on bullying in young children. Listen to the perspective of a little boy being bullied in the first half of our segment, of our first segment rather, and now we're in the head of a little girl who is the bully, and we're trying to explore her motivation for harming other people and for lashing out. Alright, here we go. The bell rang and it was time to go back, but she saw the bad boy in the dirt and she got mad again. Sitting in the dirt was wrong. It ruined your clothes and nobody was yelling at him. He got to do everything fun. She grabbed his stick and broke it, feeling mad, mad, mad. And it didn't help, so she pushed him hard. That helped a bit, but then he started to yell loud. She had to make him quiet or she'd be in trouble. But he wouldn't be quiet. The teacher came running and asked what was wrong, and she knew she was going to be in trouble now. The teachers would be mad, and Daddy would be mad, and Mommy would be mad. And then the bad boy's Mommy and Daddy would be mad at her, too. She wasn't a bad one. He was. He had a nice mummy and good crayons and swing, and Peter liked him, and it wasn't fair. She felt her tummy hurt, but that was wrong. No, it wasn't her tummy, because it was too high. Her chest was sore, and she wanted to scream, so she did. Loud and loud and loud. He made her feel bad. She hurt, and it was mean and no fair. The teacher took her side and made her sit. And then her teacher came too, and they hugged her and told her sorry. And then they made the bad boy move. She felt nice again, and she'd gotten a hug. She'd tell Mommy when she went home, and maybe then she'd get another hug. Mommy had a headache when she was home, so she had to be quiet and not make noise. And it was hard since her tummy was growling. But she wanted Mommy to listen to her news and hug her, so she sat in her play corner and colored her coloring book. All the pages she liked were full, so she had to color one of the not-so-nice ones. There was a cat licking its paw. Bibi didn't like to look at the cat because it reminded her of the big cat who used to sit on the windowsill and meow until somebody shooed it away. Bibi never shooed it. She liked to look at its tail move. It was pretty. she wasn't big enough to reach up onto the windowsill and pet it, but she really wanted to see what its tail felt like. It looked soft and it was so bendy. And in her cartoon, the cat drank milk. So she took the milk mommy gave her for her snack, and she tried to share it with the cat so it would come down and she could pet it. But the cat was mean and it jumped and scratched her, and it broke the glass and made a big mess, and Bibi got in trouble with Daddy. Mommy was on her side that day and told Daddy that it wasn't Bibi's fault, that the cat was feral, and it probably wanted Bibi's milk. Daddy was still cross, even though it was the cat's fault, except he was cross with Bibi and Mommy for letting the cat in. Bibi didn't like cat's food that day. She colored over the cat's face, making it go away. By the time she was finished, her tummy was making a lot of noise, and she wanted to snack. Maybe if she was very, very quiet when she asked Mommy for it, Mommy wouldn't get cross. She walked to the bedroom on her tippy toes and pushed at the heavy door. Mommy was lying on the bed. She was awake, and her eyes and her nose were red like Bibi's when the dust got in her nose, and she sneezed and sneezed until it was all out again. Bibi waited for Mommy to see her, but Mommy was looking at her phone. Mommy, she said in her best whisper, I'm hungry, Mommy. She tried to climb onto the bed, but Mommy shoved her away, and she sat down hard on the floor. Not now, Bibi. I'm hungry, Bibi felt cross. Mommy was awake and not sleeping like when she was sick. So why didn't Mommy give her a snack then? Mommy told her later in her loud voice and told Bibi to go and color. She said, go color or play something and leave me in peace. And Bibi refused to go. She said she was hungry. Bibi was hungry. And then Mommy yelled, Bibi, not now. Wait till your dad gets home, if he even does. And then Mommy called Daddy a grown-up word. Bibi sat on the floor in front of the door and waited. Sometimes, when Daddy was happy, he would bring food home and give it to Bibi and Mommy, and they would all eat together, and Mommy and Daddy would hug each other and even hug her, and she would feel warm and full and sometimes even fall asleep. And then when she woke up, she would be in her bed, and Mommy or Daddy would have tucked her in and put her nightlight on. She liked those days best. If Daddy was going to come, then she'd wait to eat like Mommy said, and Mommy would be right. But Daddy didn't come. He was so late that Bibi wasn't even hungry anymore. She was just tired, and she wanted to go to her bed and cuddle in the covers. But she wanted Mommy and Daddy to tuck her in, so she had to wait for Daddy to come home. If Daddy wasn't home, she couldn't disturb Mommy, so she had to wait. Her eyes closed, and she opened them as wide as she could, quickly. No sleeping. No sleeping, no sleeping, no sleep. It was loud when Bibi woke up. Somebody was shouting on top of her head. Was it Daddy? No, Daddy was so scared when he shouted. A lady started to cry, and Bibi put her hands over her ears. It was ugly to listen to, and it made her want to cry. She squeezed her eyes shut tighter and tried to go back to sleep, but all her tiredness was gone. Her ears were hurting from the shouting, and she wanted her mummy. Mommy and Daddy had to come and stop the shouting and the fighting. She opened one eye a little to try and find Mommy and Daddy's bedroom so she could run to them and crawl in with them. She didn't care that it was a baby thing. She was scared. Mommy was there, but Mommy was the lady crying. Bibi got up and tried to go to Mommy, but Mommy screamed louder than ever, ever, ever before. Bibi, go to your room. Now, go. Go. She ran quickly to her bedroom and got into bed. Later, forever and ever later, Mommy came into her room and sat Bibi on her lap. And Mommy said, it's okay. It was just a bad dream. And Bibi relaxed. Mommy was holding her, so everything was okay. Scary, she told Mommy. Very scary. I know. Mommy sounded like her nose was blocked. I know, but it's over now. Why was Daddy mad? Bibi asked Mommy. Mommy told her that Daddy was mad because people did bad things to him, and nobody made them say sorry. Mommy told Bibi that Bibi and Mommy needed to be nicer to Daddy. We need him, Mommy told her. We need him. and it'll be okay. Mommy told her to close her eyes and go to sleep. Hurry up now, she said. Daddy's waiting. So baby closed her eyes. Daddy was waiting, and if Daddy had to wait, he'd get cross again. And baby didn't want Daddy to get cross again. But wait, she had to tell Mommy her story about school and how the boy who did bad things had to say sorry to her. Maybe Mommy could make the bad people who made Daddy cross say sorry, and then Daddy would feel better. But it was too late. Mommy was getting up and closing the door. So baby closed her eyes again. She would tell Mommy tomorrow. All right, that's the end of today's sketch. It was very deliberately jumbled and vague as you peek into the heads of two very young kids. One, a bullied little boy who's starting to hate the school that he used to love, and the other, a young girl, the bully in this situation, who's dealing with a dysfunctional family and a warped idea of what is and isn't acceptable in life. Little Bibi sees a classmate whose life seems to be better than hers, and quite frankly is better than hers, and she's consumed with jealousy. She wants a mother who holds her hand and looks happy and pretty and not sad. She wants pretty crayons in her backpack. She wants to ride in a nice car and get kissed when she's dropped off at school every day. Her jealousy, which she's still too young to fully understand, causes her to act out and try to punish the little boy who's got the things that she so desperately wants. And then we move on to seeing Bibi's home life through her young eyes. An abusive father and a neglectful mother who have screaming fights and either don't understand or won't accept that their daughter has some developmental delays and needs help, not to be yelled at and made fun of. Bibi loves her parents anyway. She doesn't know that they're harming her, but she does know that she wants them to behave the way she sees other children's parents behave. It's sad to realize that this is a story that plays out in many homes across the globe. There's a saying that goes, hurt people, and there's a great deal of truth to that. Violence and aggression are learned, and when they're showing up in young children, the source needs to be tracked down. Too often, bullies are victims in their own homes and are trying to find security and control to soothe their own trauma and pain. And this does not mean that their behavior should be condoned, but it gives us a bit more insight into how and why the problem persists. If we think about how often we've been hearing stories in the news and even in communities where all of these sorts of things that are so displeasing and unliked are hushed up, it's very clear to see that people gravitate towards power because it gives them a sense of security and it gives them a sense of fulfillment. That's often because they weren't exposed to the love and the guidance that they should have been as children, and that's incredibly sad, yes, but it doesn't give a reason. Well, it does perhaps give a reason, but it doesn't give an excuse for the treatment that continues throughout generations. And there's a whole other discourse that needs to be had about physical violence between, you know, and the line between discipline and abuse. But right now, let's consider the fact that we have so many generational difficulties with parents not understanding, perhaps, or not caring enough to realize that the damage that they do to their children will continue on. And I understand that a lot of the times it's very unintentional that we damage our children, and that's not something that we need to talk about today. But we have seen that hurt people like the man in the sketch, the father who, and it's alluded to very, very lightly, that the father is feeling inadequate and feeling a rage and almost a sense of impotence due to the people in his life who are harming him and perhaps making him feel small. That gets taken out onto his family, onto his wife, and onto his little daughter, and his wife then perpetuates that cycle by not leaving. And in that kind of situation, we have a whole host of resources that are meant to be there, that are meant to help with those kinds of situations. You know, we have domestic violence shelters, we have free clinics for therapy. We have all sorts of things, but we don't talk about these kinds of things enough. We seem to think that, you know, a person who is in that kind of situation needs to lift themselves up and get themselves out of it, or needs to just make sober and live with it. Both of those things are very, very untrue. We need to create a society of people who understand that the people who harm one another, often those urges come from their own trauma, and that trauma needs to be unpacked. It needs to be treated just the way we would any other disease. If we were to give an example, a person with a seizure disorder could harm the people around them by accident while they're seizing, but we don't say that that's okay. We also don't say that violence is all right. We say that the person with a seizure disorder needs to get medication to treat themselves. Why don't we do that when we're talking about people who are violent due to mental illness, due to past trauma, due to PTSD, due to any number of other things? We really, really do need to speak more about mental health, and there are many, many organizations trying and making strides, but it's not enough just yet. I mean, we have so many programs about bullying. We have days of activism, and we have education, and we have everything that tries to help, but it's not reaching where it needs to reach, I suppose, because we still have little children who are harming one another and not understanding that their own anger needs to be treated and needs to be expressed in a healthy fashion. And speaking about anger being expressed in a healthy fashion, we see Bibi being angry and pushing and shoving and hitting because that's what she's been taught as how to express anger. We also see that she's very, very normalized to the idea of shouting and yelling as the way that we communicate with, or that people communicate with one another, because that's the way that her parents communicate with one another. And I think that over there, we really need to think about how many homes in our communities have that as the case, where shouting is just one of those things. And there's very little in terms of love and care and compassion shared between spouses and then shared between parent and child. There are a whole host of reasons for that, but without thinking about the many generations and the legacies that we've left, we all do need to make an effort and do our own part in creating good examples for children, the children in our care, or perhaps the children who see us around. It might not even be your children. It might be the neighbor's children. It might be cousins. It might be nieces and nephews. It might just be a child of a colleague. If you're around a child, you almost have a duty, I would say, to model good behavior. And when we're not modeling that good behavior, we need to think about why that is. All right, let's dissect the sketch a little bit more. We see a little bit of sexism in this one because we have a little boy who's being tormented by a little girl and a teacher who almost automatically takes the side of the little girl. And I wonder why that is. We know that violence does not have a gender. We know that there are men who are being abused by women. We know that there are mothers abusing their children. We know that it can come from anywhere. And that what you look like on the outside doesn't mean that you are less or more likely to be a victim. You cannot predict who is and isn't a victim in a situation. It's impossible. And I think that we need to think about the implications of a society where we automatically think in an altercation between a man and a woman or a boy and a girl that the boy is at fault, or that the man is at fault. It is true that a lot of domestic violence is perpetrated by men, but the figures show that it's not an entirely male issue. And so we do need to keep that in mind when we're looking at these situations, when we're speaking out, when we're condemning violence and bullying and aggression and all those kinds of things. We need to remember that we need to pay attention to both. We need to pay attention to both our little girls and our little boys. And we also need to destroy this preconception that aggression is all right in boys. It's not. Aggression is not all right in any child. Aggression is not a good thing. We are taught as Muslims that anger is something that you need to avoid, and that when you are angry, you go and make wudu. You don't indulge that anger by yelling or shouting or hitting anyone. And so we need to remember to give every education that we give to our boys, our girls, to our boys as well. We need to teach restraint and control, yes. And we need to teach that to both boys and girls. We need to teach, you know, anger management strategies. Those are so important because anger is something that we all deal with. I don't know any human being who does not get angry at some point or another, who does not feel those feelings. And the point is not to destroy those feelings or to suppress them. It is rather to release them in a healthy fashion. And it is to understand that those feelings are your own and they shouldn't be visited on to other people because you're feeling that anger and that helplessness and that frustration. And there are many ways to deal with anger. There are many strategies. I know one of the cliches is that a girl will run into her bedroom and scream into a pillow. And that actually does work. You can scream, you can toss a ball around, there are actually places in the US and I believe some other places in Europe where you can throw dishes to give yourself a way to healthily and safely get rid of that emotion if it's bothering you. But if you notice that there is a great deal of anger, there's usually a reason for it that relates to a lack of control in life in some way. Our freedom being taken away is one of the most terrifying things, and that is often the key to understanding why someone is angry, because they feel like they're being spoken over or they're being violated or no one is listening to what they have to say. And let's talk about one final thing just before we get to the end of the sketch. These children are young. They are very, very young, and I chose those ages for a very specific reason, because incidences of bullying are showing in children younger and younger. These kids are 5 and perhaps a little bit older, up to 7. Even younger children than that, we have toddlers hitting one another and screaming and we're not entirely sure why. We're not entirely sure what the reasons are behind all of this aggression that we're seeing in children and in adults and in people in general. But we do know that there are strategies, there are ways to wholesomely treat them. And so even in your little kids, you do need to pay attention and not just brush off them having a tantrum or going through a phase of hitting. There are phases like that. There are phases of hitting, biting, scratching, all of those things. But they can't just be left as, okay, it's a phase and that's it. They need to be carefully monitored. They need to be treated. You need to teach your children or anybody around you good coping strategies. And really, we just need to also be watching out for everyone in our community. All right. As I mentioned right at the beginning of this show, there are many resources available online for parents and loved ones who notice that someone that they care about is being bullied. And I recommended Childline South Africa. I still do recommend Childline South Africa. It's a wonderful organization, and it has a great deal of help available for people being bullied and their loved ones. There are specific sections dedicated to young children. There are sections dedicated to teenagers. And I believe that there are actually sections dedicated to adults. And as I mentioned earlier, they have a web chat feature. If you, a person who is being bullied, is perhaps a bit shy about talking to someone on the phone, you can just type out your query. That's between 2 and 6, on weekdays. And obviously they have the 24-hour toll-free line, which is very, very famous. Please do use those resources if you are being harmed in any way or if you believe that you might know someone who is being bullied. It's incredibly important that we treat this sickness as soon as possible, because children who are being bullied turn into adults who harm other people. And if you can stop that kind of thing, you perhaps can save someone's life, really. Because as we see, people who are bullies in the work environment or in their homes and have grown into that sort of mindset for decades it's very, very difficult to get them back at that stage. It's very, very difficult to undo that habit of anger and of violence. But if you get it early, you can teach better coping strategies, and you can help. And you can help more than one person by doing that. So please, if you see something going on, please do reach out to the places that you can, speak to teachers, speak to principals, speak to any other adult in the community who you respect. And research, there's Child Fund South Africa, which is particularly for South Africa, but there are tons of resources available online. It just requires a very quick Google search. And that's the end of today's episode. Shukran for joining us. And as always, if you have any comments, concerns, or suggestions, then please feel free to get into contact with me, Nima Drobaby. You can reach me via email at theimperfectmuslimah@gmail.com, or you can reach me under the handle theimperfectmuslimah on any social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, this and that and the other. Or you can also find me under Nima Drobaby. I hope you have a wonderful Friday afternoon, and we hope you join us again next week. Assalamu alaikum.